Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. We've traveled to New York City to take part in Climate Week conversations. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
In this episode from the Techonomy Climate Event in New York, we'll be focusing on the intersection of sustainability and supply chain innovation with Ann Tracy, Chief Sustainability Officer at Colgate-Palmolive. We'll explore how the company is driving sustainability through supply chain transformation and what it means for the future of sustainable business practices. Ann is also the newly appointed board chair of the United Nations Global Compact Network. Ann, welcome to Path to Zero. Welcome to New York for Climate Week.
Thank you.
For the Worth Techonomy. Saw you on stage. Great job. So now, welcome to Path to Zero.
Thank you.
Looking forward to this talk.
I'm pleased to be here.
The Chief Sustainability Officer for a really well-known consumer brand. And by the way, I was surprised to realize just how big the Colgate-Palmolive brand runs. Brand's been around for 200 years, right?
Over 200.
200 years.
We're the oldest consumer goods company in the U.S.
So what does a typical day look like for you as you think about navigating sustainability for a brand like Colgate-Palmolive?
So a typical day. Well, one of the things I love, so real briefly about myself, I've been at Colgate a very long time. I grew up in the supply chain and manufacturing, customer service, and logistics.
When climate early on wasn't a thing.
Right. I mean, right? Yeah.
I've been never thought Colgate about it.
No, not so much. But, you know, actually, I will say this. Colgate has been, we've had an environmental program that's matured over the years. We have been measuring reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, utilities, waste to landfill, water, since 2002. So we've been measuring, we have baseline data since 2002. So we have had an evolving program, but you're right.
Was that generally for the climate or was it for your economic betterment?
Both, yeah. Both.
I so mean, it had a climate.
But you're right, 20 years ago it wasn't, you know, yeah. There were a lot of climate change deniers, I think, right. It's fair to say.
We've come a long way
since
then.
And I think that there's a lot less deniers today because we see it every day in the news, the floods, the extreme weather and things like that, not to mention the heat. So I think there's less deniers today, which is great. And there's more funding like the IRA. There's more regulations coming. So all of that, I think, is lifting up climate change as a clear issue that has to be addressed, right?
And so on a typical day, you're working with your suppliers, your partners.
Yeah, so really the partners. So what I was going to say was what I love about my job now is that it's very external facing and internal partnering. So what I mean by that, my role is all about building partnerships, influencing and negotiating. And since I've been at Colgate so long, I know everybody. So building the partnerships internally is key. We have a sustainability and social impact strategy that cuts across three ambition spaces, driving social impact, helping millions of homes, and preserving our environment. And then 11 actions and 50 targets that sit behind that. And I kind of jokingly say I'm the master of none, keeper of all, because I helped shape that strategy. I own the strategy, but I'm not the subject matter experts on any one of those 11 actions. I work with cross-functionally with just about every function in the company to kind of make that work happen. So that's a lot of what I'm doing every day is meeting with procurement, like I'm speaking about today on stage with Dan. I'm helping procurement to shape the program with our suppliers. We work with the supply chain to reduce our impact in our operations. We work with HR on our social programs, on improving our DE&I program. We work with IT on gathering our data, making sure that it's audit ready. We work with finance now on all of the compliance regulations that are coming. And R&D to design more sustainable products. The list goes on. Global Packaging is a huge partner because of the need to reduce the amount of virgin plastic that we use, make everything recyclable. So my point I'm trying to make is I'm talking to everybody, all functions, and then externally we're partnering as well. And I've networking, you know, companies can't do this alone. We have to work with lots of stakeholders. whether it's our trade associations, our peers, even our competitors in some case, with NGOs, with consultants in some case, you know, even governments, although Colgate doesn't lobby directly, we do it through trade associations. So lots of partners are required to make this happen.
I heard you speak earlier, and your talk was far-ranging, but it finally got down to working with even your rice farmers.
Right.
I take it most of those are American rice farmers. Is that true?
Your
supply chain is certainly global.
Right now, yeah. So we purchase rice for our Hill's products, our pet nutrition products. Right now, that production is concentrated in the U.S. and Europe. So, yes, probably more U.S. and Europe.
But working with them. So at some point, you're almost, not you personally, but Colgate Palmolive is almost at the field level working with your partner.
Yeah, and another cool example that I love is, another interesting fact is that we are the United States' biggest purchaser of mint for our toothpaste.
Wow.
And most of that mint is farmed in the upper Northwest.
I've never seen a mint farm.
Yeah, well, we go, to your point, we go to the farms. I mean, we physically go to the farms. I mean, this is like the crown jewel of your toothpaste, right? It's the flavor. So there's a lot of collaboration there. And it happens to be that the Upper Northwest is a water-stressed, you might not think this, but where the mint's grown, it is a water-stressed region.
Hmm.
So we've done work with the Mint Council and MIT to improve and make more efficient irrigation systems, improve crop yields. So working collaboratively with the mint farmers. So yes, a lot of this requires working directly with the farmers.
Interesting. Heard you talk a couple times of a phrase that I had never really heard, intention action gap.
Oh yeah.
That, and kind of as I, it's really consumers want to do the right thing, but they just hardly ever get there. Talk about how perhaps you get them over the hump to go from good intentions to actions.
That's not easy, and that's where we need strong partnership with our R&D and packaging teams to design more sustainable products that consumers want to use, and ideally products that are better in some way. Not just sustainable, but better, and entice them to use those products, and then marketing to help communicate those benefits, right? Yes, this intention action gap is something that plagues consumer products companies. So there's statistics out there. We use the Insights House of Kantar, and the last time I saw their statistics, they said something like 96% of the people when polled say, yes, we want to buy more sustainable products or live more sustainably, but when actually they get to the shelf, 16% of the people follow through. Because people, especially for our type of products, don't want to compromise on quality, price, or convenience. Sure, they want it sustainable, but they also want it to be high quality, the right price, and convenient. So they're not going to compromise. So we need to kind of pull that all together.
Right. You know, you've talked a couple times about ESG. Mm-hmm. Environmental social governance. You talked a little bit about DEI. Both of those concepts really kind of were in vogue 2 years ago, maybe the last 12 months. A lot of discussion about maybe they're not the right metrics, but you seem to be holding on to both of those as important for your company. True?
It is true. And I think if you talk to my peers, you would get a similar answer. Over the past few years, I think the landscape has evolved from, you know, people just setting lofty targets that they weren't honestly really sure how they were going to make, to a time now where, you know, we have to ensure that our targets are ambitious but yet achievable.
Yeah.
And that's what we've always strived to do. And I think focus is key. So we're committed to the targets we've set. Doesn't mean we're going to hit every one of them on the nose, but, you know, we've made good progress across the board. This whole idea of how you talk about it is different. You know, you use the term vogue, but fine. We all believe it's the right thing for the business in the long run. I'm trying to shift the language from, certainly away from ESG to sustainability and social impact, and even more importantly, long-term resilience.
Yeah.
So doing all this work will make us a more resilient company. We talked about the fact that we're 200 years old. Well, we want to be around for another 200 years. So this is important work to do to ensure that.
I really want to talk some about what I think sounds like a prestigious appointment. You were not only appointed to the UN Global Compact Network USA, you were appointed the board chair. What does the UN Global Compact Network USA do?
Okay.
And what are your priorities?
So, you know, about 10 years ago or so, the UN put forth what we call Sustainable Development Goals, or the SDGs. That's what's on my pin here. There's 17 of them, and there's a whole framework behind that. And, you know, Antonio Gutierrez recently did a stock take and says we're not making the progress we need.
Right.
Those SDGs were originally put in place as a mechanism and a framework to engage private sector or companies to as a framework for them to move forward to make the world more sustainable, to reduce our impact. So we've been the UN Global Compact was formed as a way to engage companies, private sector, and organizations to make that happen. So the network is made up of UNGC groups in many countries around the world. I think we have 62 countries that have a network. The U.S.
Each country has their own
network. Each country. So there's one in the U.K. and Canada, Mexico, and so forth. And each of those networks has a board that kind of guides that process, drives engagement to bring companies in. And when a company becomes a member, they're signing up to the four principles, which are anchored in certainly environment, but also human rights and, you know, human rights, as well as fair labor practices and anti-corruption. And then there's 10 principles that we have to report on every year to say yes, we're still adhering to these. So it's sort of in one way it's a stamp of approval of in a way that says yes, we're a ethical company and we believe in these things. But more importantly, the network should be trying to provide the programming and help for the members to better integrate SDGs into their work. Now, the network is open to anyone, small, medium, and large companies. In many ways, the programming that we provide is probably most helpful for the smaller companies that don't have the expertise or resources to do this. But, we're in the process now as board chair of looking at developing a new value proposition for all companies. And how do we better integrate SDGs? We have a new staff at the UNGC Network USA, an amazing, incredibly talented, relatively young team. Can't say enough about them. So we're one of the biggest networks. And, you know, we have some work to do to try to kind of serve our membership better. The last thing I'll say, it's the largest of its kind of sustainability networks or consortiums or whatever word you want to use. There's 26,000 members globally.
Oh, wow.
Across 62 countries. So, you know, we can do something with that.
Inside that global compact.
Yeah, the UN Global Compact of all the members across the 62 countries.
So a real body of
like-minded
people.
Right.
How important is an effective UN to making progress
on
climate?
At an event earlier today where we kind of talked about that, I met Sarah Bloom Raskin, who's done a lot of amazing things in our government, but most recently she was advising the UN on net zero and kind of she put together a report of what are the things that we need to do through the UN to drive progress. And she and I talked about one of the things we do need to do is do a map of the ecosystem of all the different initiatives out there. And, a big topic these days, it was at the last COP, I'm sure it will be at this COP and even this week in Climate Week, is finance transition and how we're going to finance all this work. Because private sectors can't pay for it themselves.
Yeah.
And the banks have targets. So how do we bring all that? There's a tremendous amount of money out there, but it's not efficiently being channeled into the the biggest projects that can make a difference. So I don't know. The UN, in a way, is that the global Switzerland or whatever, that really could be a convener in a way.
Right.
That's a role they could play. But, you know, there's lots of examples out there. I was at a few events this week around water risk or water resilience. And we're partners with water.org, and they're doing just that. They're trying to make a bigger impact by channeling funds where they need to go, where the capital needs to be. And by doing that, they've gone from directly funding wells and things like that, which reached a million people, to now channeling the money into capital markets. And in that way, they're reaching 69 million people.
Oh, wow.
And they said if they wouldn't have made that switch by just funding wells and things, it would have taken them 600 years to reach the 69 million. So water.org is doing it right. They know how to do it.
So there's a model.
There's a model.
It certainly seems that there's really no other organization other than the UN that should be doing it. They seem to be the right one. Good.
Well, it's one.
Love that you're doing that. I've talked a little bit about your talk here at the Taconomy Climate Conference. Building a sustainable enterprise, strategies for impact across the value chain. I've talked about a few things you talked about, but for our listeners, you want to kind of highlight the key points you were trying to make?
Yeah, I think number one is focus. So every industry sector has different areas that are, you know, problematic or opportunities for them. And I think it's important to understand what's material to your company, your industry first, but then your own company. And you have to focus. So in a world of lots of trade-offs, you have to make choices and you have to focus because that's where you're going to put your efforts, your resources. So one is focus. The second one is partnering, both internally and externally. Partners are key. Finding the right partners. You know, you're not going to make it happen without partners.
It was a really good talk. Let's have some fun. Let's give you a magic wand. Let's ask you to do one thing in the next year, only one wish, that you think would improve climate change and sustainability overall. How would you use it?
Well, Anne? I'm coming back to the finance transition. And, you know, certainly the regulations that are upon us from Europe, et cetera, are helping to level the playing field, and disclosure is key. But I think even more importantly, as we look at how is the financing going to happen, I think we need a more standard carbon pricing mechanism because we don't value, you know, the impact that's coming is a forward-looking thing, and it's hard to put money against something that may happen in the future.
Right.
But if we start to monetize that risk in a standard way, I think that will really start to help drive some of the necessary financing.
Good use. You know, I think every climate scientist agrees on carbon pricing. I think every economist agrees. The problem is to how to set that amount
right,
and how to keep, I would argue, politicians out of it.
I know, but you gave me a magic wand.
Yeah, so we can do that. Okay. Do you think we'll ever be in a spot where maybe we have a bona fide carbon number?
If I had a magic wand, maybe. But no, it's a hard question to answer. There's a lot of unknowns, but I'd like to think babies, you know, there's CBAM in Europe.
There's some talk over here.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Europe's demonstrating you can get close. Right?
Yeah.
You can have something that works. It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
We'll start. And companies are starting to do voluntary, but that's kind of disjointed because we have to come up with our own price. And if I value it here, but another company does it 10 times, I mean, that it needs to be standardized.
Totally agree. Yeah. All right, let's try one other thing. We love to thank you for your time and expertise. Love to thank you for the, you know, wisdom you shared with our listeners. So normally we plant a tree.
Mm.
I know you live in New Jersey, but you also have a worldwide view. Is there a place that we could plant a tree in your honor, in your name, that you would appreciate?
Well, you know, I should choose one of the vast forests where we do jurisdictional landscape transition, but I love nature. I spend as much time as I can outside in New Jersey, and I'm fortunate enough to live in a beautiful rural place in New Jersey. So anywhere in Mendham, if you want to plant a tree, that's my outdoor space.
We can find that place.
And All right.
It's really as much to thank you and actually provide you pleasure. So that's good. Thank you very much. Anything else that you want to tell our listeners, maybe where they could learn more about what Colgate Palmolive is doing for sustainability?
So you can certainly go to our public website, colgate-palmolive.com, and sustainability is one of our top clicks. So if you drill down in there, you can find our latest annual report on sustainability and social impact. And we literally published just in time for Climate Week our updated climate and net zero transition plan. So that's probably a great resource for what we're doing around climate.
Ann Tracy, Chief Sustainability Officer for Colgate Palmolive. Thanks for being with us in New York. Great talk today, and thanks for being with us on Path to Zero.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Was fun.
Thank you for listening to a special edition of Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins from Climate Week in New York City. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.